You're listening to Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hello, and welcome back to the Screen Heroes Podcast on the Heroes Podcast Network, your TV and film podcast. I am Derek, your regular host, and I have with me my two lovely regular longtime hosts, Ryan.
Hello.
And Ray. And she does a physical action that you cannot hear in your ears.
Oh, right.
Ears,
this
is an audio format.
We're a podcast.
My bad.
This is episode 237 of the show. That's been the same format since episode 6, but that's cool. We have a special episode for you this week. We are, of course, going to talk your latest entertainment news, and then we are following that up with a discussion on WandaVision Episode 4, We Interrupt This Program. And then, at the tail end, we are celebrating Groundhog Day by talking about the 1993 Bill Murray classic, Groundhog Day. Because we're recording this on Groundhog Day. We've never had that opportunity before, so I'm looking forward to having that conversation. Ray, why don't you kick us off?
All right. So really fast, just because it's absolutely hilarious. Did you guys see Ted Cruz compare the left to Thanos and the Watchmen?
I have no idea.
I did. Yeah.
Okay. So it's really funny. He says that Democrats, liberals, blah, 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 paint people, capitalists, as you know, the bad guys always, and rabid environmentalists are the bad guys, and the view of the left is that humans are the disease. So we're basically Thanos. It's funny because the internet is like absolutely roasting him, including people who were a part of, you know, Avengers, like the Russos and writers.
Chris Evans, probably, because he gets into all that stuff.
Yeah. And writers on The Watchmen. So it's just really funny. Head over to Twitter to watch Ted Cruz get a spanking, and not the
sexy kind.
Not the sexy kind, the fun kind for us. So that was just brief. Now, let's talk more Avengers. So Disney Plus is adding yet another show to its roster, and it's going to be about the Kingdom of Wakanda. Ryan Coogler is behind it all. He, of course, directed the first movie. He wrote the first movie. What do you guys want to see from this? What do you guys want it to focus on?
Ryan, I'll let you take that.
You know, I mean, I don't know. The most interesting parts of Black Panther to me were like the actual like cultural stuff. So I think focus on that rather than like superheroes that come out of Wakanda. I think that would be interesting.
Okay.
You know, like it was kind of like a what was that video game, Derek, that with Aloy, Horizon Zero Dawn. It was kind of like that thing where you have like what seemingly is kind of a primitive culture, but they have like very advanced, there's like very advanced technology around them, which is kind of an interesting premise in itself. That's why it's been done a few times, but not necessarily as well as something on Disney Plus could do. I'd like to see something more focused on like the actual culture around Wakanda and the day-to-day.
So that's good. I know there is a good chunk of people that want to see like Nakia and her spy missions and more of the Dora Milaje. So
yeah, they were really cool. That's true.
Right?
Yeah, that would be neat to see.
Derek?
Sorry, I was working on a slight technical issue. So just go ahead and continue on, and I will join in the conversation as soon as I can.
Okay. All right. Well, so I wasn't quite prepared for that. I figured that you would have like some thoughts. Okay, so moving on. Derek, Ryan, earlier today, Zack Snyder like posted an image of the Joker behind like some frosty filter. Do you consider that a tease, or is that like, what is that? Do you think it matters?
I mean, people are calling it a tease. I guess it's a tease in the same way that Heath Ledger's tease was, like when they had the exact same thing, like him with frosted glass, and you know, the makeup on the glass or whatever. I don't know. It was cool, and like I'm excited to see what Zack Snyder's Joker looks like, but I don't know. I don't really need a tease for a character who's probably going to be in the movie for 45 seconds.
Yeah, I agree. His caption is more intriguing to me because he says that, he said, congratulations on creating a fantastic character. And then he tags Jared Leto and David Ayer, or like hashtag, because neither of them are on Vero.
Right. But I mean, that it was David Ayer's and Jared Leto's take on the Joker. Right. And he just kind of, although this is supposedly a totally different take. So it's really just the same actor. And from what I understand, people think that he's like ripping off some of the other Joker's looks. So I don't know.
Interesting.
I think that's kind of silly because, I mean, Joker's always been a guy, or almost always been a guy in makeup. So how do you really? Yeah.
It's like saying that like the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy ripped off the Batman look. Like it's a DC Batman movie. Like what do you want him to look like?
Yeah, it's not really a great Batman movie, but
you know my point though. That wasn't a criticism, right? Of all the criticisms those movies had, it wasn't he looks too much like Batman.
Right.
Right. That wasn't a criticism. So it just seems weird to criticize Snyder for making the Joker look like the Joker.
Yeah.
You know,
like, there's going to be things. Yeah, apparently they wanted a whole different. They wanted a whole different look for him. That's nothing like they've ever seen before. I mean, I don't really get that criticism, but
yeah, I don't know. I think when there's going to be things to criticize, like that, just seems like you're just wanting to fight about something.
I'm sure his clown face paint will look different, like a different clown than the other ones. So,
I mean, look, the last time we had a Joker that looked completely different from all of the other Jokers was Jared Leto, and people hated it. So
that's not true. Joaquin Phoenix looked really different. He had a completely different color scheme.
He did have a different color scheme, but he still was much closer in line with previous Jokers, with the face paint being kind of clown-esque. You know, Jared Leto's was like the real departure.
It was. It absolutely was. But I think Jared Leto and Joaquin Phoenix both departed from the purple and green kind of look. So
yeah, that's true.
It worked. So speaking of, they also dropped the debut date for the Justice League, right? It's March 18th.
Snyder Cut of Justice League, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Yes, March 18th, 2021 on HBO Max, 4-hour long cut. One giant cut is being dropped. There are rumors it'll release on disc at some point in the near future as well.
Yeah, so we've got that to look forward to.
How are we handling that as a network, Derek? Do you want to talk about that so people know what to expect?
I do want to talk about that. So normally we do an episode, right? And we've got our news and our main topic. And recently we've started to kind of add on a third piece of that when we have something else to discuss. Like this week we're doing Groundhog Day. Well, because the Snyder Cut is 4 hours, and because it's releasing the day before the premiere of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, we don't want to put everything into one episode. We don't think it'll do either topic justice, no pun intended, and we don't want it to be a 3-hour long episode. So instead, what we're going to do is record two different episodes that week. We are going to release two different Screen Heroes episodes the week following the release of the Snyder Cut and the premiere of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. We know we will be doing our normal one live on Tuesday that week. The other one may or may not be live. We'll kind of see what happens there, but we will be releasing two separate episodes that week in March. So you can expect that on, I'm going to look up the dates. The dates are March 23rd and March 24th. So there you go. That's what we're doing. Two really good episodes. So we can dive into the Snyder Cut and we can dive into the premiere of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and if anything ties in the WandaVision or not. So there you go.
So make sure you dive in ASAP so that you can chat with us live, because we're going to have, at least for sure with Snyder's Justice League, we're going to have a lot to talk about, whether it's good, whether it's bad. You know, mm-hmm. we all have our opinions on how it's going to be, but, you know, the truth will be fun to discuss.
I mean, if it turns out that it's a 4-hour movie that we have nothing to say about, that would be shocking.
That would be discussion worthy in itself.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Moving on.
All right. Yeah. Okay. So, did we talk about Ray Fisher being completely out of the Flash at this point?
I thought we did.
Okay.
Yeah, we did discuss that. Now, he has been supportive and is sharing and promoting the Snyder Cut, though.
Right.
He wants nothing to do with the current Warner Brothers CEO on any future projects, but he is wanting to support Snyder. So
that's fair. I mean, Snyder has been very supportive of him, so I completely understand that.
And they did confirm, Snyder confirmed that Booyah, Cyborg's catchphrase from Teen Titans, has been removed from this version of the Justice League, since it was never intended to be in Snyder's version of the Justice League. And I mean, honest, I don't have strong feelings about that either way, but people seem to be really, really happy or really, really pissed about that.
Right.
Ryan seems happy.
I'm happy. It didn't suit the movie at all. It was just stupid and forced.
Yeah.
And there's no way that could suit the tone of Zack Snyder's movie. If it didn't even suit the tone of Joss Whedon's, like, come on.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you 100%.
I guess, like, Ray Fisher was fine, but my problem with him is he didn't really emote, like, at all.
Because he hated doing it.
I mean, that's what we'll see in this version, right? Like, is that the reason, or is there something else?
Right.
Oh, I was talking specifically about the Booyah. I thought that's what you were talking about, too. Supposedly, he hated doing that line, and he fought against it. Yeah. So I figured he just meant he didn't emote during that line.
Well, he didn't. He sits there. He like looks slightly off camera, and he's like, "Booyah."
He really hates his life. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if somebody is supposed to hate their life, Cyborg would be the one. Like,
that's true.
Dad turned him into a monster. But okay. Right. So, I guess it's, you know, Screen Heroes adjacent. There's all this stuff going on within the last couple of days about Marilyn Manson, and Evan Rachel Wood has come forward with abuse allegations during their relationship. Well, because of it, he has been dropped by Creepshow and American Gods, his appearances. So even if he's already filmed them, they're gone. They're out of there. And, couple of his other exes have come forward, including Rose McGowan, saying that she supports Evan Rachel Wood. He's also been dropped by his record label. So really the only one in his corner right now is, who's a crazy lady that was married to Kurt Cobain? She's in Hole. Not remembering her name.
Okay. Who is Marilyn Manson supposed to be in American Gods?
Doesn't say. He was just going to make an appearance.
Okay. Well, you know, I mean, good on those companies for doing that.
Courtney Love.
Oh, okay.
Courtney Love's the only one in his corner. And when Courtney Love's the only one in your corner, you know, time to rethink your friends.
Now, for what it's worth, he did come out and say that everything that happened in those relationships was consensual.
Yes, he did. Right now, he said that, I think his quote was, what she said is a horrible distortion of reality.
Lovely. Right. Lovely.
Yeah.
So I'm sure.
So, I don't want to jump into judgment like, you know, happened with Johnny Depp and some of those. I mean, what was being said sounds pretty terrible. And I certainly hope that, you know, that didn't actually happen to her, but I also don't want, you know, I hate these situations.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, we've made mistakes jumping in, or at least I have, with an opinion too early. And, you know, I'm kind of waiting to see how it develops.
I mean, to be completely honest, I'm not surprised that Marilyn Manson turned out to be kind of a piece of shit. But at the same time, he has been under public scrutiny since, and in the public eye since he was 19, and he's now 58. Like, that has to warp somebody. He was even blamed for the Columbine shootings. Mm-hmm. And
which he actually handled really well, if I remember correctly.
He did, but that's going to take a toll on your mental health. And
for sure.
Like, we don't know what the things he has been through publicly have done to his mental health, and if he has used that against people as an outlet, which, you know, just because you're abused doesn't mean you can't abuse others. So it's not an excuse, but it's just impossible to know the full story.
Right.
So I'm not defending him by any means. The allegations are really disgusting. But it's just an odd situation that, you know, like, he's obviously been through a lot. Same with, you know, like, Michael Jackson's the poster boy for this kind of stuff. He was raised under public scrutiny. We all know his dad was super abusive, and he grew up having a very abnormal childhood and career. So in his adulthood, he didn't process things correctly or healthily. So Marilyn Manson could be the exact same. It doesn't excuse his actions, but, you know, it explains.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well,
Dustin Diamond died.
Oh, yeah. So last week we talked about Dustin Diamond going into the hospital for stage 4 lung cancer. And this week he succumbed to it. So
44 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. 44, quite young. Some of his Saved by the Bell castmates had some comforting things to say about it, but, you know, very young, and cancer's got to be one of, if not the worst way to go. So not something you would wish on a person.
Right.
Well, on that uplifting note, break.
No, can you just dive into a break like that? That's way too depressing. Is there nothing else that we can talk about? We can talk about Ghostbusters Afterlife. So Ernie Hudson's been interviewed recently about the upcoming Ghostbusters sequel. And he has basically confirmed that the Winston character gets more fleshed out in this film and becomes a full realized character, which I think a lot of people like myself are excited to learn more about who he is, since he kind of felt sidelined in the original two movies.
Literally cropped out of scenes.
Yeah.
On the home TV release. Yeah. Yeah. Ryan, I'm sure you're happy about that.
Oh yeah. I mean, Ernie Hudson's always been like the biggest supporter of Ghostbusters fandom and been carrying the torch. So yeah, anything that he gets, I'm happy for. He also, I think it was him, made a comment a few weeks ago in an interview that was something along the lines of Rick Moranis might be in the movie.
He basically said, I'm going to leave it to the producers to say.
Yeah, which that is a weird comment. Yeah. Like, instead of just saying, no, he's not in it.
It is a really weird comment, and I don't understand it, because, like, when you look at, like, Marvel's been very secretive about things. People just lie,
right? Yeah, they just say no.
They just say no, and they move on, and we're never going to be mad that they hid that from us as part of the fun of the reveal. So I'm very curious why he answered it that way.
Right, because other people have just said no. Yeah. So, and it's, you know, like, that gives us a little bit of... Like,
he's no stranger to these interviews. So, yeah, it's weird.
Also, put Ernie Hudson in the Wakanda show, please.
Oh, that would be cool. He played the god Poseidon in Once Upon a Time, and it was so much fun.
He's a good actor. Yeah, like,
he is.
He's kind of a bit actor at this point, but he's good. And, you know, I agree. I'd like to see him get some more, you know, high end, like, you know, Carl Weathers in The Mandalorian, you know, he's not done a ton since the '80s. So seeing him come back was awesome. You know, bring back some of these character guys that are, you know, good actors and just aren't really getting their due. I'm totally on board with that.
I agree.
Well, I'm definitely at the point where I'm on board with giving more roles to actors who are excited about the content. Right?
Exactly.
Who are like borderline, if not fans themselves,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they bring that passion to it. They bring that knowledge and that interest to the interviews and to the conventions and all that type of stuff. And it helps build what those fandoms are. And I think that's why a lot of people like me are excited to see Ernie Hudson's character get more of a background, because we love him. We like how he's handled everything over the years, even if the movies didn't treat him well.
For the most part, I am a huge fan of celebrities and actors advocating for themselves, using social media to be like, hey man, I want to play this role, because it just seems like a lot of fun, and that's what I would be doing. I mean, we've all joked about that on the podcast. We're like, hey Hollywood, hire us to write scripts. So
that's right, we'll advocate the hell out of ourselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are very few times where I'm like, oh, you are batting out of your league, but you know, that's me kind of being an elitist fan girl. But,
true.
Well, yeah. Look, there's some good news. It was basically confirmed that Elizabeth Olsen as Wanda is showing up in Spider-Man 3, which I think is confirmation enough that we're all in Spider-Man 3 at this point.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, I heard your confirmation the other day, babe. It was really exciting.
Yeah, you're playing Mr. Freeze right there?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, definitely. I'm definitely playing one of the Mr. Freezes. So,
yeah. Yeah, they're crossing DC over. It's going to be great.
Well, my role is Bubbles from the Powerpuff Girls.
Yes. Nice. I'm just playing myself.
Yes.
There's a podcast scene where you don't really see the other hosts, but you just see me in the same room. It's really great.
Perfect.
I think I'm on with J. Jonah Jameson at the time.
Yes.
But,
yes.
Perfect. Yeah.
As it you know, be. Funny thing, I feel like we're going to see in the show or the movie soon, especially now that J.K. Simmons is back. So J. Jonah was just elected mayor of New York in the comics.
Oh, God.
And I feel like that could really ramp up the tension between him and Peter.
I don't think he needs that. Like, there's already enough tension. If you played the game or the Sony games, they do a really good job with like the way current social media and stuff is, and how current podcasts and things work to like bring a ton of tension between him and Spider-Man. So, that would be a one way to do it for sure.
Yeah.
In the comics, they've probably never done that before. So that's one of the few avenues they can go where they haven't done it. But, you know, I don't know. Might be a little overkill for the movie.
All right. So now with that, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're talking WandaVision episode 4. We interrupt this program, and then we'll be back after that to talk Groundhog Day. All right, and we're back. We are here talking WandaVision episode 4. We interrupt this program. Lots of stuff happened in this one, I think, especially compared to the previous episodes. It's got a 9.1 on IMDb, which is pretty high praise at this point. What'd you guys think? Improvement? Is the show going in a good direction at this point?
Yeah, I think if I was like telling people to wait to watch the show until they can get a good binge on it going, now would be the time I tell them to go ahead and binge the first 4 episodes, because, you know, we had talked about in the past that this show might have been better in a binge type environment rather than the way it is with just like weekly episodes. And a lot of people are kind of waiting until they could binge the whole thing, but I don't think they need to. I think now is probably a good time. Of course, the whole series hasn't come out, so that could change. But now is probably a good time for them to get into it, because now, you know, now there's things to talk about week to week. The first 3 weeks, there wasn't as much. But this week adds a lot to where you're like, okay, now I can discuss this with my friends like you can The Mandalorian and some of the other shows.
Yeah. Ray, anything you want to add to that?
No, it was a fine episode.
Ooh, okay. Interesting. So, I mean, kind of the main focus of this episode is two new characters to the show, but not to the MCU, and that's Darcy Lewis and Jimmy Woo, played by Kat Dennings and Randall Park. They both return as their previous characters, and we get to kind of see what's happening outside of Westview. We get to see how they've been trying to infiltrate Westview. We get to see, you know, how the beekeeper shows up, for example.
We get to see Sword for the first time, really.
Yes, we do. What do you guys think of Sword? Do you think I have some opinions on Sword, but
at the moment, Sword is not very different from Shield. And that's fine. They had one episode of 30 minutes to set it up. So I'm just waiting to see its departure. But, you know,
we've also seen a little bit in Far From Home, which shows they have a space base built up, which takes place after this one. So likely, I imagine at this point, Sword is a pretty new organization. It is very Shield-like at this point.
I mean, we don't know how new it is, I guess. We know that Monica's kind of raised in it. That's mentioned in the show because her mother helped create Sword. And so we have to assume
That tells you that it's fairly new, because that means that it's occurred after the 90s or like late 90s.
Right.
And, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. was created in the 40s.
That's true. If you're comparing it to S.H.I.E.L.D., yeah, I mean, that's a fair point.
I think you have to compare it to S.H.I.E.L.D. That's the, you know, I mean, they're very similar in so far. So
I think my biggest problem with Sword really has nothing to do with the organization. It has to do with a writing trope that just I'm kind of bored with. And it's where you have a highly advanced, highly sophisticated intelligence agency that's filled with nothing but very sharp, very smart experts. But the people in charge are still like total assholes to everybody and like constantly cutting people off and talking down to them like they've hired a bunch of morons. And I hate it.
Are you talking about Hayward?
Was that his name? I forgot his name, but
yeah, I think that guy's like, I'm pretty sure he's got a pretty big part in this in terms of like the villain of the series.
And I mean, I guess that's,
I have theories on that.
I guess that's fine. And we could talk about that for sure. It's just like, it's just kind of an old trope of the mean boss in this situation, and it's just boring. There's no reason for Darcy's character to have friction or anything like that for trying
why
to, like,
bring
do her job.
On as an expert if you are going to like belittle the way she does things.
Yeah, I'm just kind of sick of that, and I'm not saying it would be necessarily bad if he ends up being the villain, but it's like we just got Sword, so to immediately turn like the boss into the bad guy just seems kind of a bummer, since we already had S.H.I.E.L.D. completely fall apart in the movies, you know?
I mean, yeah, I don't think that that's exactly what happens, okay. But I think that he like made a deal with the devil to become the leader of S.W.O.R.D. and like Mephisto essentially.
Gotcha.
So he isn't really like, I mean, I don't know. That's not a good thing to do, but it's also not like, an evil Nazi organization being impregnated into your government organization for 60, 70, whatever, however many years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I don't know. I think I definitely see your point. And maybe I'm completely off base with that, but he definitely, like the way he reacts with Monica coming back and things like that, lead me to believe that there's something extra weird going on with him. He also knows a lot about things he probably shouldn't know a lot about. I don't know.
Like what?
We'll see how it plays out. Well, like he knows about the CMBR radiation. Like I know he sort is like an intergalactic thing, but like the specific radiation that came from the Big Bang seems like that's an oddly specific thing for him to know about.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, you know what I mean? Yeah. When they brought this professional astrophysicist on board, and she, the first, or is that what she, I can't remember what she was. She was some sort of scientist, astrophysicist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she, like, the first thing she does is test for CMBR. And then, like, he knows all about that this exists, but didn't think they should test for it.
Well, there was
until she got there.
There was another dude who looks just like Hayward, who, like, didn't know what she was talking about at first. Right.
Yeah.
Like, right. So like when she
was just a random underling, she's the one that asks him for the coffee and the like old TV.
Right.
But like he's a jerk too.
Yeah, he is.
And like his job is just to show her where her workstation is. Right. And he's asking her, grilling her all these questions and she's trying to answer them. He's being a jerk the entire time. Right. So it's like both dudes in charge, you know, and it just, I don't know. I'm just a little over that. Like either be on the same team or don't.
Right.
At this point,
that's a fair complaint. But I mean, in real life, a lot of bosses are dicks. So and,
yeah,
and coworkers are dicks. So I mean, I don't really see. It is a trope, but like it's also kind of real. So I don't have as big of a problem with it.
I guess I just want to see these people be better.
To me, the weirdness from Hayward came off when he was kind of explaining to Monica that he took the position reluctantly. Because it should have been hers. That to me does not sound like nobody ever in these situations truly means that. You know, it totally came off like a false humility.
He also sent her off on this mission that should have been handled by a much lower level employee. Mm-hmm. Right, with a missing persons, and potentially he knew more. I mean, look at S.H.I.E.L.D., right? Nick Fury always knew so much about everything going on. There was no questions in his mind. He knew basically everything. And to think that S.W.O.R.D. wouldn't know that something a little bit crazier than a missing persons case was going on, I mean, I'm pretty sure he knew that he was sending her into something more dangerous than what he led it to be.
That is very likely. I was thinking something
to get her out of the way, right?
Because the whole like the vanish, the blipped, whatever, they have to stay grounded because, you know, Maria said so. That makes sense on the surface, but why something so small like this?
Right.
Well, it's also her very, very first assignment back after being gone for 5 years. Right. So like she doesn't really know how the world has changed. She doesn't know any new protocols. She's already missed some protocols, you know, that have happened during her absence. So I wouldn't want to immediately send her out into space or anything either. I'd want to kind of let her get her feet under her, you know?
Yeah. Send her to work a missing persons FBI case.
Well,
grounded,
I don't know,
is
enough.
One thing, but like, yeah, a one person missing for somebody so higher level, somebody who was going to be the leader of S.W.O.R.D.
Right.
I mean, the FBI called S.W.O.R.D. though, right? So it wasn't like S.W.O.R.D. decided to interject.
That's what he said. That doesn't necessarily mean that's what happened.
No, but at this point, like he might be an ass, but I don't have a reason to like distrust him yet from that standpoint, other than just being out for himself. Right. I don't have any reason to believe that he is evil or like an actual bad guy in the superhero universe. Right. So it just seems like they had to do this. This is her very first. She's literally the first person back from the blip. Right. So this is the very first assignment they're putting any of these people on. Playing it safe doesn't seem like a horrible idea.
So I just want to be clear that when he turns out to be a bad guy, you're going to eat your words.
No.
And
if he's the bad guy, it's obviously a different connotation.
Right. I'm just saying you're going to be ready to admit that when it happens.
I'm admitting it
and
now.
And saying that you are right, Ryan. You are right.
No, I'm admitting that.
That's all now. I want to hear. That's all I want to hear, though, when that happens, you're going to say you are right, Ryan.
Sure.
Okay, perfect.
I mean, he's not, but...
That scene with her coming back was really cool, by the way. That's probably one of the coolest scenes in the MCU, in my opinion. Seeing, like, how crazy it was in this hospital when she, like, comes back together and, like, all the panic. It was very Walking Dead-like, like when Rick wakes up from the, you know, coma or whatever he was in. That was really cool, in my opinion.
I really liked the juxtaposition because it was played for laughs in Far From Home. Mm-hmm. And here,
it incredibly
was
serious.
Going like how serious, how horrific it actually was when people vanished.
Right. And yeah, and it was, I think that was needed, right? Because, you know, when we think of the snap and all the people coming back, it raises a lot of questions. And a lot of them don't have answers, but now we're starting to get some answers as to what like really happened to people when the second snap happened, or the fourth snap, I guess it was, however many snaps there were.
all the
snacks. Problem with the Avengers movie, I've talked about this before, that the macro scope of everything tends to desensitize us. So when we get down to the nitty gritty and we focus on the really serious things that happen, the car crashes, the helicopter crash,
the person who wasn't there when their mom died because they were snapped away,
the hospital situation, then the actual extinguishing of half of the life in the universe is incredibly more serious than it was at the end of Infinity War.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's easy to forget the scale, and like, you know, because of the scale, the smaller things that people would have missed, and like how personal it was. And so I think that thing was really, really great. And it really is. It also is just really beautiful. Like the CG, or, you know, when her face is like reforming and whatnot, that was really well done. They handled it all really well compared to like the end of Mandalorian surprise that wasn't handled so well. I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it, but the cameo that shows up at the end, this was much better. I mean, this looked very, very good.
The audio that played while she was reforming.
Oh, yeah, with her mom?
Of Carol and Maria talking.
Oh, was it Carol and Maria?
It was really cool. I didn't watch the episode on Friday. I watched it on Saturday, and I saw something that was like, Brie Larson appears in WandaVision. Brie Larson had one of her lines recorded from Captain Marvel playing.
Yeah.
Like, on top of music. So it was a, like, pay attention or it's not there kind of thing. Wow. So, but it was, in the moment, really beautiful. I wouldn't have called it a cameo, even if Brie got, like, a $5 check from it. Like, but it was really interesting that, like, her mind goes to the first time she realized there were aliens and, you know, watching her heroes, her mom and her mom's best friends.
Right. So I had some other things on my list.
Absolutely.
Please.
It's yeah.
Okay, so in our personal screen heroes chat,
we do chat.
I said something about I didn't think Darcy was an astrophysics major or astrophysics.
She wasn't.
She was not. She was a political science major, and so that was good to remember. I think it's interesting that after meeting Thor, she decided to focus on the bigger picture.
Absolutely. I think that's really cool that she just changed her entire major. It is also really impressive that she became a doctorate or got her doctorate in 8 years for something that she wasn't even involved in.
It's so more than 8 years, though, because there's the 5-year time jump.
Yeah, this show is like 2 years ahead of us.
Got it.
Still impressive.
That's right. I mean,
getting a degree like that is you know, hard in any capacity. So,
because like it's 2023 right now in WandaVision, isn't it?
2022, I think. No, well, the snap just happened, so
It would be 2023.
So she was really like 12 years, which is totally realistic.
And she was not the greatest character in the Thor movies.
She was just there to make people laugh.
Yes.
Like, they gave her all the one-liners.
She is much better in this show, I think. More fleshed out, which is fine. I mean, she's a character that has now matured and gone through a lot of things, I imagine. So it works. And I like her a lot more in this than I did in the Thor movies. So that's good. I was hoping for something like that when they announced she was going to be on the show.
Well, it really helps that they gave her a legitimate purpose for being there. You know, she's an expert in something that's valuable to the plot. Whereas, before she was kind of there. I'm still unclear why she was even there in the first Thor movie, if she's a political science major, you know.
Well, they said it was it was an offhanded comment because somebody asked. I think Stellan Skarsgård's character asked, and she said, you know, it was the only internship I could get or something.
Yeah, like something she was doing for the course credit or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's a very flimsy kind of thing to throw in there. So this is much better. You know, that's all.
Sure.
she's in there, she's an authority immediately, so the things that she's saying have weight on what's happening.
Absolutely.
Next on my list, I had, so we talked about that radiation. So they said that that was a heavy form of radiation that happened during the Big Bang theory, or during the Big Bang that formed the universe. Uh-huh. Well, in Doctor Strange, Wong explains that the Infinity Stones came when the Big Bang happened. They were formed during the Big Bang. So the fact that Wanda has some control over the CMBR radiation that was potentially involved in the creation of the Infinity Stones, I think is going to play a role into how Vision comes back, and she's going to be able to reform the Mind Stone. Having had the experience of destroying the Mind Stone, I feel like that gave her some insight into that, and she's going to be able to make it back from that.
So far, we have seen her powers manipulate most of the same things that the Infinity Stones also manipulate. We've seen her change reality. We've seen her change time. We have seen her mind control. So I think Wanda's powers are a culmination of all of the Infinity Stones together. Now, maybe it's not the same amount of power, but just, that's my theory.
It's also worth noting that her powers came from the Mind Stone.
Yes.
Because they were experimenting on with the Tesseract on her and her brother. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they're mutants. We haven't discovered that yet. But, you know, something with that unlocked their power or their potential or whatever. So, you know, the fact that she's more intimately familiar with the Mind Stone than she is with any of the other stones. So I think that that's how they're going to bring Vision back, or how they're going to explain that the Mind Stone has come back.
So before we move on from that, I want to ask you guys then, because we see kind of a pretty like dark moment where she's picturing Vision as like dead, right? With the stone ripped out of his forehead, his eyes glazed over. Right?
Is he dead or is he not?
So I want to talk about this a bit, because I'm worried that the truth isn't going to make sense when you think about it. So right now, we've now confirmed that she has taken over an actual town filled with actual people called Westview. And she is using these people. She is controlling them in some capacity to live out this world. And she has been able to modify this world, the color scheme. She's been able to change the objects that are there and the time period aesthetically that it exists in. But Vision is there. So here's my question. If Vision is not back to life, if he is just a figment of her imagination, but like, you know, realized, why would she need to take over people, and why not just build a town if they're not real? And with that in mind, I think that is why Vision has to be back, because she was able to recreate him, reform him using all of those abilities. And then she's just controlling the others. Thoughts?
I mean, you make good points. I mean, I don't know exactly the answer at this point.
Right.
My thoughts are mostly like, I think the things I've seen online are like more questions about, is Vision is it he created the way we've seen him in her fake reality? Or is he like a puppeteer dead body? Is she puppeteering his dead body around, and she got a quick glimpse of like something beyond her, beyond her illusions. Like she saw through her illusions for a second.
Yeah.
Or was it a vision of Vision?
Well, that's a good point. I hadn't considered her using his dead body. And since he's an android, it's not like it would be decomposing after 5 years. So that's a very interesting point that I had.
No, but she also did have sex with him.
Yeah.
So
she's been kissing him in every episode.
She literally, there was the scene where they were under the covers together, and it did the old sitcom like black screen.
Right.
You know, sex scene. So, I mean, that I initially thought that it was just like a vision that she got, like a memory that was triggered. But then like there's a preview for the next episode that came out that showed him like outside of the bubble, and it looks like he's that dying Vision, or like that dead Vision. Like it's a really far away and you can barely see it, but it looked to me like he had the hole in his forehead. So, I mean, I don't know. I really hope they don't go like the Wonder Woman 84 kind of darker option that's unnecessary. But I'm worried that that's the case.
Man, how weird of a coincidence would that be?
I know, right? I mean, it's not quite the same situation,
No, it's not. But it's still, that's still dark. I had not considered her using his dead body. That never crossed my mind.
So. I mean, in theory, after the events of Infinity War, the body would have gone somewhere, right? Like,
sure. But I mean,
they're not just going to like let it go.
Yeah, but at the same time, well, okay, so that does lead to some interesting questions, because she would have had to have gotten it. It probably would have been under some kind of surveillance.
Right.
And
you would think.
So you'd think that the Avengers and S.W.O.R.D. would have just known she was doing something. Ray, what do you think?
I don't know. The idea that she is just walking around with this corpse is
super dark, right?
Horrific.
Yeah.
Like, but God damn, it makes for a really good show.
I know, that makes it so much darker that I'm like, Disney would never do this. But then if they did, like, right? Come on. Sorry to interrupt you, but
no, it's just every week they answer like one question and give us 10 more. So it's just, I find it really troubling to try and theorize, because it literally makes my brain hurt some days. Who's the villain? Hayward, Mephisto, Agatha Harkness? Is Wanda the villain herself? Who are they setting up? Is it Wonder Man? Is it the Young Avengers? Is it like just Photon? Like, so I've kind of just enjoyed the show because it's,
well, you do that, but we're here to make for an entertaining show by discussing things about it.
How dare you?
I know,
theorizing,
right?
Okay, right. So but to piggyback off that, we do at one point get to see a whiteboard on the back with Jimmy Woo,
yes,
and asking a bunch of questions, which is great because it's basically the same questions everybody else has been talking about in real life. But on that, first of all, Agnes, they have like a board with all IDs of the real people, mm-hmm. and Agnes has no ID mm-hmm. on there, but neither does Dolores. Is that her name?
The Dottie.
Dottie. She also doesn't have one. She doesn't even have a paper up there. So that lends some weird questions there. But then also on that board,
they're still trying to figure it out.
On that board, it mentions Skrulls, which I thought was interesting because Wu is an FBI agent, not a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent or a S.W.O.R.D. agent. So clearly there's some general knowledge about Skrulls at this point, which I think is the first confirmation that we've gotten that, like,
well,
somebody beyond Nick Fury knows. Well, I guess we know a few of the people from Captain Marvel now, but
I mean, it couldn't, maybe it's not general knowledge, but it could be like FBI, CIA knowledge.
But I mean, that's compared to like, you know, director of S.H.I.E.L.D. knowledge. That's a pretty like big thing.
But you'd think like once S.H.I.E.L.D. fell, that information probably got disseminated to other branches.
You know. That's true. Yeah, and we know that like Black Widow hacked, you know, the S.H.I.E.L.D. computers and released all the information on the internet, and the Skrull thing happened in the 90s. So.
That's true. Yeah, they never really follow up with what the fallout is for that.
Right, which is weird because that would be a huge deal.
Right, you'd think so.
Like WikiLeaks type stuff, you know?
Yeah. They don't really ever dive into that. That's interesting.
Get on that, Marvel. We need to know. But I think that would be possible that the public, or at the very least, like some information services would have pretty decent working knowledge on the Skrulls. And I think that's interesting. It may come into play in Secret Wars and whatnot.
The list he's writing also includes what's with the hexagons.
Right. Which is interesting because there are a lot of hexagons on the show, including the actual shape of the town is a hexagon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was interesting. It was almost like Marvel was like, okay, so these are the questions we want people to ask. So if they haven't been asking them, this is their
They
cue.
Will now. Yeah, they will now. We're going to make them ask these questions,
which is clever. I mean, I don't have a problem with that. That's fine.
No. Yeah, it's good. The only other thing I had on my list was lost episodes of the show, of the actual sitcoms that Wanda is making, because they reference, at one point, Darcy references that she washes dishes or does laundry, something along those lines, once an episode. But at that point, we'd only seen two episodes, right. I think. And there's a couple other like things you see in the background that lend to the belief that there's probably some episodes that we aren't seeing.
Yeah,
we're only really seeing the important ones. So I'm curious to know what happens in those other episodes. And Disney, please release some of those just as like bonus content, one shots or whatever.
Well, that's where it gets kind of difficult, right? Because the idea would be that other than when they're sleeping, the show should be going. Right.
Right.
And when she is sleeping, I don't know necessarily.
Like a Truman Show thing.
It would be. Yeah, exactly. Now, when she's sleeping, I mean, maybe everything's just shut down and everybody's like trapped or something. I don't know. But you would think then that there would be hundreds of hours of content if she's been there for, you know, a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, and this is 3 weeks after Endgame, give or take. So she's been there probably 2 weeks, maybe longer, maybe, you know, something like that. So there'd be a lot of content, I would think. But then you can see that when she edits things, right, like the Beekeeper, yes. for example, that gets edited in the broadcast, right, that Darcy right. is watching. So there's like missing frames. There's chunks that are missing. And so I thought that was kind of interesting because it starts to...
Oh, it absolutely is.
Who right. like who is editing it? Is it Wanda that's editing the output, or is somebody like Mephisto just letting out what, you know, the edit is? You know, these are things that I wonder about. Maybe it's obvious to other people, but
I mean, I thought they basically confirmed it was Wanda.
Well, she's the one doing the editing in the show, like inside, but the fact that that doesn't broadcast, I feel like somebody else might be controlling the actual broadcast. I know she's what's making the things happen.
Why would Mephisto want to broadcast that? You'd think he'd be better off with it not being broadcast.
I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of questions about the show that I have, so I will hopefully get those answered, or maybe it's not a big deal at all. I don't know. I'm just trying to theorize things that are interesting to discuss and, you know, I guess may have an impact in the show.
I just assumed that Wanda is accidentally broadcasting this because she's basing it off of television. And so it's not even conscious that it's being broadcast.
Okay, Derek, I'm throwing shit at the wall and just seeing what sticks.
I know,
okay?
I'm just bouncing off of that.
I'm just wanting you to say, wow, Ryan, you got this and this and this right.
We'll see.
And then my life will be complete.
He wants this all on record, Ray. So that way at the end exactly. of episode 9, when we do
I can be like, I told you.
We can go down the list and I can be like, okay, Ryan, number 3. Yep, that's right.
Hey,
number 4.
I don't know if you remember, but I did tell people to buy AMC stock like months ago. And now look at it. So whatever. Anyway.
How's your Dogecoin?
Hey, don't worry about that. Anyway, I do want to mention that there's a bunch of spoilers going around for supposed spoilers. Nothing's been confirmed yet, but supposedly episode 5 and maybe 6 leaked. And so, you know, if you're worried about something getting spoiled for you, or if you want something spoiled for you, they are floating around social media. Boom. I know they were on Reddit for a while. They've been floating around on Twitter. It's basically screenshots of a specific actor on set. Or on the show. So that it's a pretty big spoiler, though. So, you know, if you don't want that, if you want to view it the way that they want you to view it, you only have to wait a few more days. So just stick with it, you know. Cool. Yeah.
So, you know, Monica gets thrown out of Westview and she's able to stay conscious long enough to explain that it's Wanda that's doing everything. And so that kind of is, you know, keying off everybody about like who's doing what at this particular point. And that was, you know, that catches us all up, because basically this episode takes place during some previous content, basically the first 3 episodes of the show. Was there anything else that happened that you wanted to discuss before we move on to Groundhog Day?
Oh yeah, we're still doing that.
I just to point go off your last point, Derek, Monica has no idea. I mean, she knows that Wanda is a big part of what's happening, but she doesn't, you know, if Mephisto or Agatha Harkness or something is behind the scenes, she has no way of knowing that. Would just, attribute that all to Wanda. So I think that may be a bit of a red herring, but I guess we'll see.
That's fair. Mm-hmm. Ray, anything
Groundhog else Day.
Yeah, let's talk Groundhog Day. I think that's a good place to
stop. All right, well, then we will be right back to discuss Groundhog Day on Groundhog Day. We'll be right back, everybody. All right, we're back. We are back. Thank you for staying with us. If you are still here, we are talking Groundhog Day, the 1993 Bill Murray-led film. It's a classic. We are discussing it because we are actually recording on Groundhog Day. I believe it's the first time that's ever happened for us, so we thought we'd take advantage of that. The film is of course, directed by Harold Ramis. And
written by Harold Ramis, produced by Harold Ramis.
That's right. And he plays the doctor.
Yeah. As well. Yeah, he did a little bit of everything with this movie.
A little bit, yeah. A good cast of people. Michael Shannon's got a very small bit role towards the end of the film as well, which is pretty funny if you see it now. And yeah, let's talk about it. When did you guys first see Groundhog Day? How long has Groundhog Day been in your life?
Definitely as a kid. I would watch it with my family. We love that film.
I don't actually remember the first time I watched it, to be honest. So I don't know how long it's been in my life. I mean, definitely my entire adult life. I'd like to think I watched it as a kid, but I can't imagine I appreciated it for what it really was.
I definitely didn't even take into account the ethical situations that
or how long it may have actually been happening. I just assumed it was like 3 weeks or something.
Well, I didn't see it until high school. I bought the 2002, 2003 edition of the DVD because it was a Bill Murray movie and it looked like fun. So I didn't see it until I was probably 16 or give or take. But yeah, I mean, it was immediately one of my favorites. So I guess let's dive into things. So we talk about like how long we think he was trapped, and there's a lot of theories about this. Ryan, I know you've got something based on some script stuff that didn't actually make it into the movie.
Yeah, there was a screenwriter that was interviewed about the movie, and somebody asked him how long that Bill Murray is actually trapped. And apparently in the original screenplay, there's a throwaway line where he said that he'd been trapped and waiting for her for 10,000 years. So that was interesting to me. Obviously, any reference to that has been cut out, and it's been made to seem like it's not 10,000 years. I think 10,000 years would be a lot darker of a movie than this dark movie already is. But so that's interesting. I think other people have done the math and said it's like 35 years or something along those lines because of the amount of time it takes to learn the skills that he learned.
That's definitely my math. It would be somewhere around 35 years, maybe a little bit longer, depending on like how many people there are in town and stuff like that. Because, you know, they say that to become an expert in something or a master of a skill, it takes about 10,000 hours, which is about 9 years, depending on how much time you would spend each day working on it. So if you figure he's a master pianist, a master ice sculptor, he learns, you know, French, and he's a poetry expert. You know, that right there is four different things. So that's, you know, brings you into the 30s already. And that doesn't include knowing everybody in town. That doesn't include learning all of the patterns like stealing the money, right, off of like the Brinks truck or whatever it is. And it doesn't include how many times he has to redo things like the date, right, when he gets, you know, the drink wrong and he gets the drink too wrong. And, you know, it just kind of keeps going every time that she slaps him, all that type of stuff. So I think 35 years is a reasonable guess, but it could be a little bit longer too. But I would say, yeah, 10,000, just that would have to be just like completely insane. I don't know if a person could come back from that.
I mean, even 35 years is tough to imagine coming back from, but yeah, 10,000 is a whole nother level.
What do you think, Ray? How long was he trapped?
I think 35 is definitely a bit closer, maybe like 50, 60. But like you said, there's a lot of evidence that he's been there for a while.
Yeah, because I mean, he does have like the whole like suicidal route where he tries to kill himself every way possible. There's the trying to
and
save.
And of course, we see him kill himself a lot less than he actually said that he did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he mentioned he'd been stabbed and burned and, you know, all his shot, all these other things that we didn't see. So
exactly. Yeah. And then, you know, he tries to save the old man and that doesn't work. And we don't really know how long he tried to do that.
I feel like he never gave up on that. I feel like every single day, once he tried to save him, he continued to try and save him. Because, you know, by the end, he was catching the little boy and helping Buster and doing the Heimlich and everything. So it just leads me to believe that he kept trying to do good. So maybe he knew that he was always going to die, but instead he just decided that he was going to give him a good last day.
Could be.
Yeah, that's very possible. And I think that's kind of like, we talk about like what breaks the cycle, right? And, you know, most people look at it as him finally getting Rita, Andy McDowell's character. But I don't know that that's really necessarily what it is as much as he's finally decided to just do the best he can. Right. He's not really going after her in that final version of the day. He's doing everything he can in town that he's learned that he needs to do to try and be happy, to try and help people and all those different types of things. And she likes all of that. Right. That's that impresses her. But I feel like that's almost a side effect.
Yeah. Me too.
For sure.
I don't know if we have an answer to this, but I've always wondered, what do you think causes him to get stuck?
So this was also in a deleted scene. It was written that he had a curse placed on him by a witch. And Harold Ramis ended up cutting it because he thought, one, that the... I guess unnecessary explanation was just better. All of us just guessing. Maybe it's just because he's a dick, but also because it brought a weird, like, supernatural or silliness to it all of a sudden.
Okay.
Yeah, I kind of like the fact that it's ambiguous and you can just kind of guess. Was it because he was a nasty guy? Like, what was it? You know, but I kind of like that aspect of it.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
I like to think that Punxsutawney is purgatory and it fucks with every outsider.
And there are theories about that, too. I mean, you know, there's nothing to say that, you know, other people haven't gone through the same thing or are doing the same thing. So.
Yeah, I mean, one could argue that since he becomes a better person and he gets the girl at the end, that maybe he's actually dead the entire time and getting the girl is just his version of heaven. He's not really alive.
Yeah, like the story of Sisyphus pushing the boulder up the hill, you know, it's way better if it's not a boulder and a hill.
Yeah.
If you don't know that you're being punished.
Right.
Right.
And I think that kind of works. It forces, it's a good way to allow not so great people to grow and become better. And if you haven't watched The Good Place yet, I would highly recommend you go watch The Good Place, especially if you like some of that philosophical type stuff.
This is easily just as weird and raunchy and campy. And like, it's a lot of fun. So it's same wheelhouse. Mm-hmm.
Now, Ray, you mentioned some problematic stuff, some problematic behavior that Phil.
We talked privately, of course, because, you know, we're husband and wife. We watch the movies together. What? I'm sorry this is how you're finding out, but you were the one to propose.
When did this happen?
Okay.
Too much. All
right, I'm sorry.
Thanks, Ray.
You're welcome.
So... what he does with Nancy has got to be rape. It has to be. But is a rape also with Rita. Now, like, he doesn't actually have sex with Rita ever, but he is calculating and deceiving her. So there's some sketchiness to all of that.
It's tough because, like, she probably in the moment is consenting to the sex. So, you know, it's definitely manipulated.
Well, it's false pretenses.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's...
Like, yeah, he lies about
it's problematic for sure.
It's the same as the Revenge of the Nerds sex.
Right. The Darth Vader thing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so you're not wrong.
The thing is, though, like, with Rita, like, yes, they don't have, he doesn't have sex with Rita during the film, but based on the end of the movie, we have to assume that they do at some point.
Yeah.
And yes, he's a better person now, but how he got there is kind of sketchy, and the things that he knows about her and the ways that he has become were very fueled by wanting to be with her. So it's not, I mean, if there is a spectrum, I guess that's not as bad necessarily as it is with Nancy, but I don't know that it's necessarily clear either.
Yeah. And I mean, even the stuff that she's doing, what's her name? Rita, is that her name?
Andy McDowell's character?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The things like when he's like really, he's really pushy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
At the house, like when you see like the longer scene, before it starts cutting into the smaller scenes of like him getting slapped or screwing something up, he is really, really pushy and it's uncomfortable.
She says no so multiple many times.
Yeah, it's very uncomfortable.
She needs to leave. And he says like, oh, just let me show you this one thing. And then, you know, hours later, she's there.
But I think it's meant to be uncomfortable. I mean,
yeah,
it's problematic, but I'm not necessarily convinced that that's, you know, like that I think that was by design.
I do too. I think the whole thing is basically to make us feel like even though Phil is being nice to her, he's still not a good guy. His intentions still aren't great.
Right. Exactly.
And my worry is that, you know, at the end of the movie, he's supposed to be a better person, right? He's grown, he's learned, he's helped all these people, and he, quote, wins the girl because he's now a good person. But did he just get to do a lot of really bad stuff and he just got sick of doing all the bad stuff because he got to do it 1,000 times?
That could be.
Could be.
Because he starts off bad, right? So we see him do bad things first before we see him do good things. So part of me wonders if he just got bored of all the bad stuff.
No, it's a fair question.
You know, I mean, how many times can you buy
problematic in itself.
Right. Exactly. Because, I mean, how many times can you buy the same Mercedes and steal the same bag of money and sleep with the same, you know, women under false pretenses that are in the same town? Like, at some point, he runs out of things to do that are bad.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then I wonder, did he grow or did he just stumble his way into finding something interesting to do that just happened to be good?
It's a fair question. And I mean, I think a lot of that lends itself to the things that happened on the set, which we don't need to spend a lot of time with, but because we've talked about it on the show a little bit before, but this movie was what split up Harold Ramis and Bill Murray. They were really good friends, worked on a lot of movies together. And then this movie, because they didn't agree on the direction of the movie, ended up them not talking for like 20 years. Mm-hmm. Because Harold Ramis wanted it to be more serious and Bill Murray wanted it to be more funny.
I thought it was the other way around.
I don't think so. I thought Bill Murray wanted it to be funny, but I could be wrong. Either way, a disagreement split them after this and they didn't talk to each other. Apparently there were some blow-ups on set that were really uncomfortable. So yeah, you know, the fact that it's like there's no growth at the end and some of that may be translated through the fact that there was production troubles, you know, and disagreements between the way the movie actually ends and the way it was originally supposed to end and things like that. So, then there's the rumor that we talked about a little bit in chat, or not a rumor, confirmed that Michael Keaton was offered the role. And yeah. I know you have some thoughts on that. Probably both of you guys do.
I mean, it's very interesting, right? Like all three of us are fans of Michael Keaton. I don't think that's a secret, but you know, this would have been post Batman and post Beetlejuice. And so he was a very prominent actor at that point. Lots of people
multi-layered too. He did comedy. He'd done serious, just like Bill Murray. Well, but had Bill Murray done much serious before this movie?
Not really.
This was the turning point.
Yeah.
And so I think Michael Keaton could have done a really wonderful job with it. I think he would have brought a very different weight to it for people, because at the time, like, watching it now is a little bit different because we know Bill Murray's range better. But at the time, I think a lot of people went into it and saw it more comedic anyway because of who Bill Murray is. And he plays the character very sarcastically, very bitingly. And Michael Keaton could have gone either direction with it, which could have kept the audiences guessing a little bit more about intention or about tone. So I think it could have even been maybe a more complicated movie if Keaton had done it.
For sure. What do you think, Rachel?
So here's the thing. I think that Keaton would have nailed it. Out of all the actors that were busy and working during the 90s, I think that if anybody else was going to play this role, Michael Keaton would have been the best, because he balanced seriousness and comedy very well. I also think that his career would have not had a slump. You know, Jack Frost basically killed his career for about 10, 15 years. And I think if he would have done Groundhog's Day, he never would have done Jack Frost. He wouldn't have been offered that role. And it would have kept him, we would have seen more Michael Keaton movies. Whereas if Bill Murray hadn't done this film, he and Harold Ramis wouldn't have gotten into a 20-year grudge. And
we might have gotten Ghostbusters 3, honestly.
They would have done more movies together. They absolutely would have, because Harold Ramis 100% cast him in movies, like, all the time. He thought of Bill. Also, Harold Ramis's career wouldn't have had a slump.
Right.
Harold Ramis's career had a slump because he had all these options for Bill Murray type films and he didn't do them. So we got such tragedies as Year One.
Ugh, don't even remind me.
So I actually think that for timeline perspectives, we would have gotten better art had Michael Keaton done this movie. But it may not have been a classic. Groundhog's Day might have been just another film. So
that's a really good point. I think you're right. I think you nailed it. And I think, you know, there are also reports that Harold Ramis wanted Tom Hanks for the role initially, but passed on him because he was too nice of an actor back then, because Tom Hanks had really only played very lovable goofball type characters.
Tom Hanks still hasn't played jerks like Phil Connors is in the first half of the movie. He has played misled heroes, like the Captain Sully thing. You find out that Sully guy is not the greatest guy in the world, and Walt Disney was not the greatest guy in the world, but on film he's never played a jerk.
Sure.
Yeah, well, yeah, but he's played some serious stuff, though, like, you know, Road to Perdition, you know, and things like that that are darker, that are gritty.
Okay, so he is like a villain in Road to Perdition. He is. But he's still not like a jerk.
I mean, Woody is a jerk in the first film.
I mean, in all fairness, I'm going to Tom Hanks explain my way out of this.
Okay.
Anybody would be a jerk if you're working against
Tim Allen.
Yeah.
They were apparently good friends back when that first one came out, before Tim Allen went a little off the rails. But anyway, there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff with this. One of the things that we didn't point out, one of the reasons that there was some extra tension, is Bill Murray was going through a divorce at the time and basically used the movie as like his sole focus and obsession to get through that divorce. And I think that made things very difficult as well. If this movie had been made 3 years later or 3 years earlier, it might have not created a problem between him and Harold Ramis. So I think it's just, this was the cliche perfect storm scenario to create that divide. And it is really sad when you think about it.
It really is.
And yeah, you know, the Ghostbusters fan in me goes, well, maybe we would have gotten Ghostbusters 3. There's a script. There's all these things for it. You know, what could have happened? And I think I agree with both of you guys that Michael Keaton, we hear a lot of like weird casting that could have happened and things like that. But I think this one is probably the best one that I've heard where I'm almost like, man, that would have probably been equally as good movie, if not better. Mm-hmm. Bill Murray is great. And there were moments where I was like, God, there's no way Michael Keaton would have done this that way.
Right.
Or been able to pull off Bill Murray's thing. And a lot of what you get with Bill Murray is improvisation, right? Like he'll come up with stuff off the cuff. That's awesome. And I think Harold Ramis likes that. And so that's why he went with him in this movie. And maybe Michael Keaton isn't as good as that as he is on that. But I don't know. He had already proven himself to be a good serious and a good comedic actor at this point. So mm-hmm. he could have definitely done a really wonderful job. And I kind of want to visit another reality where that happened just so I can see it, because I feel like it's got to be pretty
good. I think it might have been a better timeline, and I might just go ahead and do the math and figure out how that timeline avoided us getting Trump. I will figure this out.
Like the butterfly effect?
Yeah. Yeah. We're not in the darkest timeline, but we're in a pretty dark one.
Yeah, there are lighter timelines where Michael Keaton did Groundhog Day, for example.
And more work.
Right.
Now, what's funny is one of the other actors that was considered for the role that Harold Ramis turned down for being too nice was Chevy Chase, who I think we all know.
Turns out he's a huge jerk.
Yeah. So,
feel like that was easily Bill Murray. He was like, dude, no. Chevy Chase is a huge dick.
Well, also at that point, I don't think have we ever seen Chevy Chase in a serious role? I mean, I don't know that would have worked out very well.
No, I've never seen Chevy Chase do anything.
And at this point, like he was known for like the Vacation movies and or maybe just movie at that point.
And I Fletch. Can't remember.
Fletch, maybe the Three Amigos had come out at that point. But yeah, I don't think he could have pulled it off. Keaton is by far the best secondary to Bill Murray, and he might even be better than Bill Murray. So hard to say.
Yep.
Fair enough. Anything else that's worth bringing up about Groundhog Day?
I love it. Even if it's not perfect, I love it.
Same here.
Same. Big Sams. All right. Well, then I guess that's going to be it for us this week. Thank you for joining us for this long episode as we covered a lot of different topics. Next week, we will be back to talk WandaVision Episode 5 and any other entertainment news that comes to be by then. We are, of course, Screen Heroes Screen Heroes and the Heroes Podcast Network. We have a Facebook group. I just did it. We have a Facebook group. We would love you to join. It's called the Screen Heroes Podcast Forum. Please join and talk with us. We post news and memes and polls and discussions and spoiler threads and all those types of good things. So come join us out there to talk all movie and TV stuff that you can imagine. Otherwise, you can follow us at Screen Heroes Pod on Twitter. Find the show at heroespodcast.com or anywhere that you find your favorite podcasts on that app of choice, and drop us a review. If you drop us a review, we will read it live on the show. I can promise you that. I am the Star Trek dude. Ray, where can people find you?
I am the Siren Ray dude.
And Ryan, where can people find you?
I'm the dude playing the dude disguised as at Buster Props on Twitter.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thanks to everyone who joined us live. We're live Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern on Facebook. We'll catch you next week, everybody.